Initiate Cowrat Podcast.
Long, long time ago.
So, our daughter is happily married now, and I'm getting close to being a grandpa, and everybody's happy, things are good. They live far away now, but they found a church that they like, and so that's cool. That was one, that was always my main question, like when we would chat, like, so how's things, you know, settling into your apartment? Have you found a church yet? Not that I was like pushing them. I knew that they, you know, were on it, you know, whatever. But so I feel like life is good with our daughter nowadays. And so point being, back though when she was 14-ish, 14 or 15, she had got her first job at age 14. One day I went into her room and I think Linda was in there and they were talking. And I saw this, like, new stuffed animal sitting on her bed with, like, a heart on it. I felt like there was maybe some other gift-type thing that looked like it was romantic. And I'm like, what's all this? I picked up the bear and I looked at Grace. I'm like, what's this? Where'd you get this? And she, like, just turned away from me. I'm like, was all confused. And I looked at Linda. She's like, just shook her head. No, like, don't ask. Okay. This was like a new, wait, she doesn't even want to answer the question or talk about it. I don't understand what, like, okay, whatever. So I just left the room. Anyway, so Linda talked to me later that night. So she met a boy at work and they've been talking at work. And of course they've got cell phones, so they're texting each other. And so that's where these gifts came from. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Anyway, as we talked more, Linda gave me a little more details, like, this boy told her that he would give up marijuana for her if that's what she wants. And I'm like, all right, that's not a great sign. He doesn't claim to be a Christian, but he said he would be interested in learning about Jesus. And I'm like, yeah, well, yeah. If she was Muslim, he'd be interested in learning about Muhammad, I'm sure. Like, you know, that kind of thing. And I'm like, okay. And she's like, she just doesn't want to talk to you about it. She's talked to me about it. And of course, my immediate thought is like, oh, great, she's going to end up on drugs and she's probably going to end up pregnant and on drugs and, you know, just immediately panicking. Like,
yeah.
So I'm like, but I don't want to like overreact or freak out. So just calm down. And eventually we had I'm like, okay, we got to talk about this. We can't just like, you can only talk to mom and not me. And so we talked more about it. I'm like, so why didn't you want to talk to me the first time? I don't know. I don't know. I knew how you would react. And like, okay, yeah. I had that same experience. I didn't want to talk to my dad about things sometimes. Not that I would be like irate or something, but you might react in the moment. It's probably good that I was able to process it a little. So anyways, we talked more. We learned more about this guy from Grace. And at one point she said that he's struggled with depression. And he said at one point, oh, I just love you so much. If you ever leave me, I'd probably kill myself.
Oh, gosh.
Like, oh no.
The con.
Yeah, right, exactly. And so she's trying to convince us, like, but he wants to learn about Jesus. And it's like, we've talked about this kind of thing in the past that...
Missionary dating.
Yeah, missionary dating. It's not a thing. Again, of course he wants to learn about Jesus, because that's what you want to talk about.
That's what you want to hear.
Yeah, exactly, right. At one point, Lynn and I, we sat down with her, like, after the boys were in bed, and I said, Grace, come on down. We just want to talk more about this. And
gonna go to the principal's office.
Yeah, exactly. So we're asking questions and trying to explain principles and whatever, and, you know, what would Jesus say, and what does the Bible say, you know, don't be unequally yoked. And she's upset and got all this, you know, reasons and excuses and whatever, and I'm just, like, growing increasingly frustrated. And so we talked to Pat, our pastor, and his wife. We had got together with them to talk about it. And I'm just, this whole time, I'm just like, I don't know what to do. I'm just, this is all going to turn out terrible. This is what I always feared. And, you know, and they told us about a similar experience with their daughter. And he said, you know, you can say, well, you're never allowed to talk to him again. It's like, well, what's that going to do? Like,
yep.
That's going to make him go underground. And,
yep.
You know?
Yep.
And like, you could take the phone away, I guess. And and every time she said, I'm going to go out with a friend, then you got to follow her, you know. And I'm going to stay overnight at so-and-so's house. Like, okay, right. Who's going to be there? And then we have to get the other parents to spy. And or we got to wait outside the window and see who shows up.
Stuff like that.
Like, and the boy lived in a different town, and neither of them had driver's licenses yet. So I was like, okay, well, that's nice. I appreciated that part. There was some distance, at least. And so I was like, yeah, I, it doesn't make sense to me that you can just say, you're not allowed to ever talk to him again. And that's final. That's the end of this discussion, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
That kind of thing happened when I was a kid, like with my dad. And you see it in like old movies, you know.
Oh, yeah.
The dad's a big jerk and whatever. But
yeah.
And of course, they, depending on the movie, they probably overdo it. And,
and then usually the girl's the hero. And
yeah,
exactly. She sets him straight. Yada, yada, yada.
And the parents apologize to the daughter.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Like, how many Disney movies now
yeah,
is that?
Exactly.
The now, we had told her no dating until 16. Part of me was like, maybe 20 would be better. But. So a little side note, not with the same boy. She's like, well, I'm going to go hang out with a friend at the mall today. It's like, well, what's...
Here you are.
I'm like, well, what's her name?
Her
it's like,
name.
Oh, it's a guy. Now, this wasn't the same guy. This was a different story, just kind of as a side note here. He's like, oh, so-and-so guy, whatever. I'm like, just the two of you? He's like, yeah. I was like, well, that's a date.
Right.
She's like, no, it isn't. We're not... We don't like each other like that. I was like, right.
Yep.
We said no dating till 16. This is what we call a date.
Yep.
Like, I fully believe you that you're not interested in him that way and he's not interested in you. That's fine.
Yes.
This is still what we're calling it. Yeah, exactly. Oh, here's the other thing. Like, do you know for certain what's in his mind and heart? He says, oh, I just want to be friends. Like, just whatever. Either way, this is what we define as a date. So,
yes.
Sorry. If a third person is with you, then that would be fine. So she invited another friend. Look, that was still the rule at this point because she wasn't 16 yet. So, but they would obviously, again, they would talk at work and they would text each other all the time. And but again, like I said, we didn't put any like limits on the relationship. Like, you guys can talk on the phone, you can text, you can talk at work, obviously. You can even hang out together when there's other friends there. Like, that's fine. And like the Bible says, guard your heart.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard to do when you're 14 and you've got all the feelings and
mm-hmm.
emotions running the show.
Chemicals.
Exactly.
Yes.
But again, we had, I don't know, three or four more conversations, me, Linda, and her, sitting down, just the three of us. And it always went the same way. It was just yeah. us going like, this is...
Banging my head.
Yes.
Some new dents in the wall.
Right. And again, trying not to be like too... strict or forceful or whatever, like, let's reason this through together. Like, that's kind of the attitude we were trying to take, you
yeah.
know,
yeah.
and think about these things. And when we had met with Pat and Teresa, they gave us some ideas and, like, just questions to ask her,
yeah.
you know, to get her to think and whatever. Like, one of them was, presumably you want to get married someday to some guy. What would be the ideal man in your opinion?
Yeah.
Not just, like, looks or whatever, but what kind of heart, what kind of spirit, what kind of
yeah.
character would you want him to have, whatever. And I thought, oh, that's great, because then she'll come up with, like, the best guy, and you'll be like, is this him?
Yeah.
Is this what you're saying? Like,
right.
It didn't quite go that way, but whatever, you know. She's like, I don't know.
Well, let's stop and think about it.
Right, yeah, exactly. So then at one point she asked, I don't know, some school dance at his school, and she asked if she could go, and she's like, well, Mom and I need to talk about it. And we talked, and we were like, this looks like condoning
yep.
the relationship.
And a recipe for nothing good.
Exactly. Even if they're with a group of friends the whole time, whatever, like, if nothing bad happens, it feels like condoning, you know, even if it's not technically a date because there's friends with.
Yeah.
So we told her, we're like, well, sorry, this just, we don't approve of this being a romantic relationship. Like,
yeah.
again, I know you guys are talking all the time on the phone and stuff, and you're telling each other how you feel about each other all the time, I'm sure, but this is, we're going to draw the line on this one. And of course, she
yeah.
was upset and whatever.
Yeah.
And it just kind of went on like this. And of course, we were praying about it and like, God, just make her do the right thing. Please.
Yep.
Show us what to do. Give us wisdom.
Yep.
Change her heart. Change her mind, you know.
Yep.
If he's going to believe in Jesus, sure, let's do that. That would be good, too.
Yep.
And clean up his life. Now, that doesn't mean where you're like, okay, now we
right.
approve suddenly. Like, there's still yep. some character and maturing
yep.
to do.
Trust is built.
Exactly, yep. One day, we were eating supper, and Grace came and sat at the table, and... She's looked like she was about to cry, and so we're eating, and I'm just kind of looking at her. I'm like, what's wrong? She's like, she just turns away. I'm like, okay. She ate quick and ran back up to her room. And then I looked at Linda. She's like, she broke up with them today. I was like,
thank you, okay. Jesus.
Yeah, right. And I was like, all right, you can be sad that this is something to mourn. It was something that you thought was going to go somewhere. It was an attachment that, you know, even if it wasn't a wise thing, you know. And so let her have her space for a while. And finally, when she was like ready to just talk about it, she's like, oh, I'm so relieved. I wanted out of that relationship like 4 months ago. But she, you know, felt kind of stuck, and he said more
guilt tripping stuff,
guilt tripping type things. And then, you know, as she opened up more, she's like, oh, if I would tell him I can't talk right now because I'm chatting with another friend of mine, he would get angry and, guilt trip, and you never want to talk to me, and that kind of thing. And so, you know, it turned out, and I don't take like full responsibility. Like, we did it the exact right thing, and we did the perfect steps and recipe to make your child do the right things. Like, this was like, it was a shock to me that she turned out deciding this wasn't a good thing to continue. And, you know, we did some praying, we took some advice from our pastor and his wife. Yeah. And I've always been of the philosophy, like, kids are humans with their own will. I've got my own will. You can tell me what to do, and I don't know. I might very well be angry just because you told me, and so I'm going to do the opposite because I don't like what you said. Even as an adult. Like,
Right. Just because you did that.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess I feel like one of the things that we did that was wise, kind of like, as I already mentioned, we're like, we can't force anything. We obviously there's some lines you have to draw.
Yep.
But you got to let the child, the other person, whatever the situation is, like, you can talk about it. You can offer wisdom. And obviously, if it's your own kid, you have more authority and, like, you're going to listen to me. Like, you may not agree with me, but I'm going to say what I have to say, at least. Like, you know, say it's like a coworker or a friend, they can be like, I don't want to hear it. Like, okay, I'm done.
Right.
But even though, like, even though it's your own child, like, just treating them like some kind of puppet or...
Right, that's domination, as Pat would say, that, which is a hellish thing.
Right,
It's not a biblical mode.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, like I said, like, okay, we can force them to hide it from us, like, by that method. Like, And so, and having patience and letting it, giving her time and to think and pray about it herself or whatever.
Her being a minor, I mean, there, if it comes to it, you have legal leeway. You know, if you really have to exercise that on something, you can do that for their safety.
Right.
If it comes to that, it's like, well, I'm sorry, that is absolutely not safe. That's not going to happen.
Right. Yeah. I've imagined scenarios like, you know, because if you hear, heard stories of other families, like they take their kid and they move to Canada to get them out of this situation or something, you know, and the kid hates them for the next 5 years until they're finally like, yeah, that was the right thing. You saved my life probably or whatever.
Right.
So,
well, we know people that was the case with them at one point, and I think they would say that that ultimately was an important component of them getting free from this destructive relationship. But it's not necessarily your first thing to check, first option to take.
Right.
But the mistake we kind of made in a couple of ways to some degree was you should be wary. That should be your default, especially with 10, 12, 14, 16-year-olds. You should start out in the wary position and ask questions, like Pat always says. Like, you can always ask. Then they can try to explain rather than you coming off accusing them. Because right away, then they're defensive. If you get them the opportunity to talk, you find out more. And well, there's less friction.
Right.
Because the issue with a lot of parents today is they either just think it's okay, so they're not even looking to stop such a thing, or they assume too much that things are this way. And we kind of got bit a little bit like that, and it was like, okay, need to start from a different position next time with that. So the subject for this episode is going to be, did we win? And by that meaning, winning being in your situation, it sounds like for the most part, you all won, meaning Grace got a better deal by who she did end up with.
Right.
You guys got a better deal because you didn't get drugged through hell with her getting stuck with that other guy. And who knows what would have happened there.
Right.
It's not that we want to say as parents, like, we won, the kid lost. It's like, if what we're standard we're trying to help them toe, that we're trying to line them up to, it should be for their best interest as well as ours. If it's really the right thing, it is for in everybody's interest, and everybody does win if you end up there.
Yeah, and like I said, just thinking of other parents or people in other situations, like, it's not like some promise. If you follow the steps, it's going to work.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
When you're dealing with humans, like, there's no way to predict what the outcome's going to be, even if you do everything right, you know?
Right.
And so I just thank God that
the
situation turned out like it did. And again, that doesn't mean that there's nothing you can do.
Right.
Obviously.
Right.
I feel like most of my parenting has been like, I hope this works. God, please make it work.
Right.
I mean, things don't always work, you know, but when it works, you're like, thank you, God. I don't even know how much of my efforts contributed to the good outcome.
our prayer typically is pretty much the same battery of prayers. Holy Spirit, speak to our child.
Mm-hmm.
You speak to them.
Right.
So you can help them on their own come to the right conclusion. Holy Spirit, help us contribute however we're supposed to contribute to the solving of this thing. You know, on one hand, it's like, well, it's not true that there's absolutely nothing you can do.
Right.
Even if they're over 18, that still doesn't mean there's nothing you can do.
You're right, yeah.
But there may be some specific things you need to do, or at certain junctures and certain situations respond. Okay, yeah, no, we're not going to allow that. There's nothing good can come from that.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of response. So in praying that we contribute how we're supposed to contribute, a lot of that is just simply paying attention, knowing that it's possible. There's something you definitely are going to need to do, and you need wisdom to be able to see that in the moment when it happens, you know?
Right, yeah. Part of the battle is, or maybe the main battle, is like, take Job, for example. Somebody might look at Job's life, and when he was at the bottom, his kids all died. He lost all of his property.
Yeah.
His wife was like, curse God and die. Just, you know, life isn't worth living for you anymore. He's sick. He's got boils all over his body. At that point, the battle is, am I still going to trust God?
Right.
Somebody might look at that and be like, yep, he lost.
Right.
Everything went terrible. He must have
sinned. Yep.
He must have sinned, or he did something wrong, or whatever your explanation is. A lot of people would look at that and like, yep, that guy lost. His life didn't go the way it was supposed to. Therefore, he failed, or his life ended up being a failure.
And he's done. He's obviously can't go up from here.
You're right. Exactly. But the fact that when he said, the Lord gives and the Lord takes away, blessed be the name of the Lord. He was winning at that point.
Yeah.
That was victory. The real battle is, are you still going to trust God and rely on him, even though it looks like everything's going to fail? You literally see no way that this is going to turn for the better. And even if it doesn't turn for the better, like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, when they said, God will deliver us from this fiery furnace, and even if he does not,
we are not going to bow.
Right. We will not bow to this false God. And I feel like in my life, I've had some struggles where I've had to trust God, even though it looked like I don't know how this is going to happen. But I feel like I've got nowhere near the struggles and the extreme, painful, desperate situations that other people have had. Like, I hope that if I ever end up like that, that I that I can still say, blessed be the name of the Lord.
Right. So let's read that quick address for that. It's Job 2, starting verse 9. Then his wife said to him, do you still hold fast to your integrity? Curse God and die. But he said to her, you speak as one of the foolish women speaks. Shall we indeed accept good from God, and shall we not accept adversity? In all this, Job did not sin with his lips.
One of my fears has always been, like, okay, so we have 5 kids. And one time I was going through my head, like, all of the families that I know who have like 4, 5, 6-ish kids, they're Christian families. All of their kids were raised going to church. I feel like these are great parents. They weren't like some strict religious nutcases, you know?
Right.
And I feel like if anyone was great at raising their kids, I think these people were. And it always seems like at least one of them
Yeah.
Has gone off the deep end. And I was like, and I look at my kids, I'm like, which one's it going to be? Even, what's his name? John Piper. I was super into listening to his sermons for a long time, way back.
Yep.
And he talked about one of his kids who was like, I don't believe in God anymore. I'm out of here. And I was like, even John Piper? No. Is there any hope for the rest of us? And again, that's kind of like why I say, like, they have their own will. They are going to do what they're going to do. There's no perfect, you know, formula.
Right.
And Grace one time said, I don't know, somewhat recently, she's like, isn't that great that, like, our whole family is serving Jesus? And, like, all, like, me and all my brothers, you know, we come to church every Sunday and we worship. And I'm like, well, your younger brothers are still young. They haven't hit any hard life struggles yet. Not that I'm like, want to be faithless about it, but.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
I still, like, I don't know. We'll see.
There's a certain amount of humility that's shown and exercised by, I don't know if you want to say, being realistic, because it is a lie to believe that all teenagers have to go south, find out for themselves, do dumb stuff.
Right.
And end up having this quote-unquote amazing testimony. It's like the amazing testimony is the kid that never, ever goes through any of that, but has a genuine faith for themselves. Because it seems like there are a couple of ditches on that road, and the one of them is the Christian parent that is way too lax, does not give enough guidance, and the kid goes off the deep end, maybe eventually does get saved, maybe radically saved out of drugs and whatever, but look at the carnage left behind in their life that now they have to work through. Baggage. I mean, the other ditch is the super religious PK, preacher's kid, who doesn't have a real relationship with Jesus, but makes it look good for all intents and purposes. And maybe they continue that way for a long time, but they have a vice that nobody knows about, and they're not doing as well as they appear. That's no good either, even if it looks good. And I know there are some churches out there that they're all about how it looks. They don't want to know what's happening beyond that. They just want it to look good.
Right.
It's like, that's not good enough. That's not what Jesus died for. He didn't die for looks. He died for a genuine relationship with him that brings life to you and to everybody around you. That's the goal. And so, you know, the really, really legalistic parents, their rules and stuff, a lot of times don't bring life because they're not necessarily spirit invigorated or initiated in how they apply them. And it just causes a pharisaical or a real hard response from the kid, and it doesn't bring life.
And when I talk about stuff like, if you're too far this way, then it's not good. If you're too far that way, it's not good. One thing that always comes up to my head is like, well, how do you know where the right balance is?
Yeah.
Like, everybody thinks that they've got it right, no matter what where they are on the spectrum of whatever issue it is. Yeah, I don't know.
That's where you're praying and praying and praying. Because it's like, you can see, it's like, well, we could do this or we could do that. And it's like, we don't know what the outcome of either one's going to be.
Right, yeah.
So, God, show us.
Right.
We don't know. We know that these are different options, but which one's the right one?
One thing that I've come to learn and, you know, am still learning and trying to get better at is God wants us to rely on him, not figure it out.
Right. Not our rules and regs. And
Right. Yeah. I remember at one time in my life, I was just like, I wish I just knew, just had a list. Like, why isn't the Bible just clearly spell out everything?
Right.
Like, every question I could possibly have. I've always been told, you know, the Bible's got all the answers for everything that you could have in life. The problem is, it's like, it's got the principles for pretty well everything. It's got some specific instructions for some things. It's like, why can't we have super specific instructions for everything?
Right, yeah.
Well, then we wouldn't need God anymore. God's like, here's your instructions. See ya. You don't need me. You can't fail if you just follow this. And you don't have to even make any decisions or...
Well, he kind of did that at first with all the Levitical law and all that stuff.
Yeah, right.
That still didn't work out.
Yeah, right. That's true.
And he knew it wouldn't.
Right.
So again, talking about winning, did we win? I think, because I haven't necessarily experienced this, so I'm kind of armchair and seeing others go through the quote-unquote midlife crisis. The things I've thought about and the things I can kind of imagine that when you get into your 50s or so and you're thinking, there's not necessarily a whole lot of life left. Did I do everything that I thought I wanted to do? You start considering those things, and maybe now you have the means for the thing you always wanted, and it's like grasping onto stuff that maybe would have been more appropriate at an earlier age. and trying to grab onto it before it's totally gone and there's no way you can participate in it, you know, that kind of thing. So bouncing back to Grace's story and just the idea of, because the thing we found out in our lives later on after being married probably 15 or 20 years, we realized, you know, we never really sat down at all and just talked about, just said it out loud in each other's hearing, anything that we thought we maybe wanted to accomplish in our lives. If there was any specific desires we had that this is important to me, or that I think I want to do a missionary trip someday, or anything like that. Because you're talking about asking Grace, well, what's your ideal husband look like? That kind of thing. Those are great questions for people about to get married, or even newlyweds or haven't been married all that long, especially because you got all kinds of years in front of you or ahead of you just to talk about those things. Because you can get, you know, 15, 20 years down the road and go, oh, I really wanted to do X, Y, Z. I had a situation with my wife and I with who all we had in our wedding party. And I didn't find out till years later that she was really bummed we didn't have her sister in our wedding party. It's like, I'm sorry, I didn't realize you felt that way. And I don't remember her necessarily mentioning it at the time. And the way I went about kind of picking, expressing how many I thought I wanted, which was relatively few, those were motivated by, I won't say selfish, but they were motivated by not altogether healthy or just based on things that were somewhat unconscious. So you find out years later, it's like, oh, I'm sorry about that. So it was like, we really need to speak up, especially when you're about to get married, newly married, talk about this stuff so that you don't have, again, it's avoiding regrets, you know, but it's, and even just sitting down and thinking about, okay, what are the things I think I should do with my life? And of course, as believers, the first test those things need to go against is, do I think that's what God would have me do? Does that seem like a godly goal, a pure motive in doing that? You know, that's the test against those things. But at least think about the things, talk about them, what that might be. What might your life look like? To go back to the midlife thing, I think some of the things we don't think about, or something happens in life early on and it's like, okay, well, I can't do that right now. That obviously isn't going to happen. And then years later, there's regret over that. Or worse, you go chasing after it in a unhealthy manner, or you kind of derail where you're at in life to grasp after something whose day has long gone. And that's no good. So good to talk about the things early on. And midlife, it's, I was doing this today. I was like, so are there any, you know, like places I wanted to go? Things I thought I wanted to do? Was there any particular item I thought I wanted to own for some specific reason? You know, all those kinds of things. And I can only imagine that the midlifers that, you know, go headlong after something, they just feel that stuff just totally escaping from them and they just dive after it. I can only conjecture, but those are good things to ask, questions to ask yourself.
You're right. That reminds me of when I was a kid, probably my dad bought it somewhere, but there was this deck of cards. It was like extra large cards. I don't know what the point of that was, but it was just different. And it was
like just kind of, because I used to have a deck about like this.
It feel like, yeah,
10 inches tall.
That seems about right. Maybe a little smaller.
Yeah.
But each of the cards had like a joke about getting old. Of course, as kids, really, I don't know, we just want to play cards. But it was funny to read some of them. I'm sure I didn't get a bunch of them, but didn't understand the joke. But one of them was, this guy's standing there next to a motorcycle. It's like old guy, and he's got the helmet on and this leather jacket and all this like cool stuff. And he just looks kind of like, meh, like,
yeah.
And it said, you know, you're getting old when you can finally afford all of the things that you don't even care about anymore.
Right.
Or something to that effect.
Yep.
It's funny how, like, stuff that was so amazing to you when you were younger, things you wanted to do, and then you finally maybe get to do some of, nothing crazy, but, you know, hey, I finally get to buy this video game that I wanted when I was a kid. And like, you play it, and you're like, it's not that great. Like, I thought this was, I don't know, it's lost its magic, I guess, or whatever.
Staying up until 2 a.m. is just, it's just not all that. You know, 9 o'clock, I really like 9 o'clock.
Right. That reminds me of me and a friend of mine when we were in high school, or maybe early college, whatever. He came over to my house and probably played some video games, watched a movie, something. And for whatever reason, we just thought it would be cool to stay up all night. We didn't have anything to do the next day. Probably a Friday night or something. But we had no plan as what we were going to do. It's just the two of us sitting in my house, you know. We just thought, let's stay up all night. that sounds cool. Like, no thought of what we're going to do. And so we ended up, eventually, we were just sitting on the couch. We were chatting for a while, but then we were starting to kind of slow down. And then we were just sitting there. And one of us, our head would start to go down, and the other one would elbow him. And we kept elbowing each other back and forth as the other guy would nod. And finally, we're like, what are we doing?
Truce, truce.
Yeah, right. We're like, well, this is stupid. Like, we're dead tired, and we're just elbowing each other. This seems dumb.
I did that one time. It wasn't just to stay up late, but it was like, well, why not? It was like, I thought I was going to die by the time we got to be 6, 7 in the morning the next day. I was like, oh, I feel so yucky. So talking about winning at marriage, and marriage is a little tough because it's a work in progress, because it's not over until, you know,
yeah,
one of you passes, or, you know. So right. Are you winning? You could say, well, we're winning for now. But a thing that I don't remember what was it, said it not long ago, just talking about a simple check, you just keep asking yourself, are we growing together or are we growing apart?
Right.
Mm-hmm. The things we're doing, the way we're spending our time, especially as you become empty nesters, it's like, okay, well, what do we do? It's like, well, we can each go to our corners and do whatever thing we individually want to do. It's like, well, are we growing together, growing apart?
Right, right.
Good question to ask yourself.
There was, I think it was from a book that we read. I cannot even think if that's for sure where it came from. It probably was a book, some book on marriage. So there's not going to be a link unless somebody emails us and say, I know where that came from.
Yeah.
But it said, a good question to ask each other occasionally. And I remember we did it, I don't know, a bunch at first, and of course it drops off, but occasionally that's come back to mind. Question is, how's your love tank? Which, I guess, it, you know, you can kind of define that different ways, I guess, or whatever you think it means, but essentially, like, do you feel, like, how do you feel about our relationship? Do you feel like we still love each other?
You know? You still like me?
Yeah, right. like, do you feel like your tank is full, or, and then you can kind of have a measure, like, yeah, it feels mostly full, and that's good. Or it's like, it's feeling kind of empty, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And there's been times where it felt low, and it's like, well, what do we do? Like, I don't know. And looking back, I feel like just asking the question, I feel like it's an indicator, like, I'm asking because I still care.
Right.
Even if things don't feel like we want them to feel, or we're tired all the time, and we haven't talked or haven't spent much time, and we just, if you wonder, like, you might, is this relationship what it should be, you know, are we still in love or whatever?
Yeah.
Like, just the fact that you ask, I feel like, is, like, that's a good indicator. Like, I don't even know what to do to fix it if you say my tank is empty, like,
yeah,
but I want to know.
Yeah.
So then the second question, you know, if they say my love tank is, I don't know, it's kind of medium to low or whatever, then the second question is, what can I do to add more or to help fill it up?
Like, yeah.
And sometimes you're like, I don't know. But you can maybe talk through it, and they might have an answer. Like, you know, if you could stop doing this, that just, yeah, I hate it.
That drains my love tank.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or what can I stop doing? Or, you know.
Or if you've never read or heard of or explored at all the whole thing of the love languages, the five love languages, are you aware what those are? Maybe there's a specific item you could do, bearing that in mind, that might help, might give a outward expression of it. And if you haven't heard of that, maybe do explore that so you can hopefully focus and steer your efforts in a way that your spouse can receive that they see it as love, you know, possibility. And with adult kids, you know, are you winning at parenting? Well, when your kids kind of keep in mind the, you know, the quote, what the legal measure is as far as guardianship and being a minor or not, and that whole thing. It's like when they're 18, you know, in America, legally, they, you know, they have these additional rights and whatever. Mm-hmm. And a lot of things you can't do anymore as a parent. Relationally speaking, you know, things do shift. You shift to more of an advisor, more of an influencer. And so a measure of if you're winning at that is, do they ever ask your advice?
Yeah.
Do you treat them in a way, because, you know, as they grow to be, you know, 20, 30 years old, and as they find spouses, something that you don't necessarily think about is, you know, the relationship with their spouses. Even if you have some idea of whatever, it's like, you really have no idea. No idea. You can say, yeah, I hope they marry somebody who loves Jesus, and that their goal is they want to serve Jesus with their life, and so they want to serve Jesus with their family and with your kid mm-hmm. as their spouse, but it doesn't really extend a lot beyond that.
Right. One of the things that I heard on some Christian radio show, I think they were talking about when your kids are looking to marry somebody, like, you know, we don't live in the days of, like, arranged marriages anymore. You don't get to pick, you know.
Yeah.
Which sometimes I think maybe that would be better.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any scriptural support for that one at all, one way or the other.
Well, but, there's examples, but that doesn't necessarily.
Right. Yeah, like we said before, just because it's in there doesn't mean that's because it was being promoted. It's just a fact.
Right, exactly. And there's downsides to that. I feel like there's downsides to our method of where you just marry for love, mm-hmm. whatever that means to you. Mm-hmm. But anyway, one of the things they said was, first of all, obviously nobody's perfect. And typically the younger you are, the more ignorant you are on how life works. And you're kind of foolish and you got more pride. Life hasn't beat you up so much and taught you, you know what? You are not as strong as you think you are. You are not as smart as you think you are. And so, obviously, that'd be great if we could have, like, I want my daughter to marry someone like Solomon, the wisest man who ever lived.
And had 1,000 wives, yeah.
Okay, maybe not. Maybe not. I take it back. But, like you said, somebody who wants to follow Jesus. And along with that, I think this is, like, integral to that and part of it. Is like somebody who wants to do better, somebody who wants to figure out how life works and wants to learn from their mistakes and is willing to repent and seek wisdom.
Yeah, humility.
Some level of humility. Again, like I can look back to when I was younger and first married and I was kind of an idiot and I thought I knew things and how they worked and I thought things I could accomplish in life that is like, I'm not as smart and as strong and as wise as I thought I was. But one thing I remember thinking is like, I know that there's a lot out there that I don't know.
Right.
And I don't want to go through life not knowing those things if I can help it. My dad gave me a book on marriage and I'm like, thank you. I want to read this. I don't even know what it's about or I don't know the author, but assuming this guy's got something to say. And so I read the book and Lynn and I, early on, we both read the 5 love languages.
Yep.
I don't know if my brain is now always on. I feel like I'm paranoid that I'm going to start repeating stories. Like, we already heard this on episode 3. Like,
Oh, not the Marlin story again.
It might have been in the 5 love languages book, but I heard this piece of advice or read it. It was when your wife is like really upset or nagging and just. And you're like, where is this coming from? You need to calm down. Like, you are being crazy right now. And what you're saying doesn't even make sense. Like, just leave me alone. Get off my back. Like, that's what you want to do. Like, everything in you wants to do that. It's like, maybe she's so upset and emotional right now because there's something that's really, really, really important to her that you have no idea what it is.
Yeah.
And maybe it's not important to you. You think it's just silly. But it's important to her.
Yeah.
Like, maybe try and figure out what that is, and then decide if, like, this is just silliness. Probably you shouldn't. You should try to go the other way and say, maybe this is something that even if in the grand scheme of things this doesn't matter, this is so important to her that I want to treat it like it's important.
Yeah.
And do something for her and go out of my way and fix this thing or change this thing, whatever, and say, I'm going to, because it's important to you. I want it taken care of. I want to treat it as important.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of the advice. So soon after we were married, Linda went and changed her driver's license because she had changed her last name to mine. And this was exciting for her. She was like happy, like, yay, I get to have my new name on my driver's license and whatever. Also, we moved. We both were still living with our parents. We got an apartment and moved to a different town even. And so I had to update my driver's license as well because now my address was different.
Yep.
But I didn't have a new last name. And so she was like super excited. She said, I'm going to go change my driver's license today. I'm like, cool. And I just didn't even think about it. I'm like, I knew, I got to do it, but it wasn't important or exciting to me. I'm like, I don't want to go to the DMV. That's not exciting. Who wants to do that? And so I just forgot about it. And I don't remember how long, several months or weeks, something went by. And somehow it came up and asked me or something that I still hadn't changed my driver's license. And she just like flew off the handle, in my opinion. And just like, I don't remember even what she said. I just knew that it was a big blow up and she just stormed out of the room like mad as she could be. And I was like, again, my reaction was like, what in the world is this crazy woman talking about? Like, this is stupid. Like, you know,
oh man,
that was what I wanted to, you know, those my emotions were doing. And this advice came into my mind all of a sudden, like, wait a minute, she's normally not like this.
Right.
Why is she freaking out so bad about something that I think is just pointless? Like,
right.
And I just started to think, like, why would this be important to her? Like, I can't figure this out. Like, it's, and I just thought about it, and I was trying to figure out a way to understand it, and obviously she didn't want to talk to me at that point. She was mad at me, you know.
Yep.
And suddenly this, like, analogy came into my mind, like, what if she didn't want to change her name to mine? And she's like, it's not a big deal. It doesn't matter to me. Or what if she didn't want to wear her wedding ring? Like, it's just a ring. Like, who cares? Like,
yeah.
I'd be like,
that's
why?
A big deal to you.
Right. That would feel kind of hurtful to me. Right. Like, one or both of those. Like, you don't even want to do the things that show that we're married? Like,
right.
You know? Yep. And even though I still didn't think, like, this is not what this is. This is just changing my address. Like, it has nothing to do with whether we're married. But I thought, maybe that's how she's feeling about this. And that day I went and got my driver's license updated. I'm like, all right, if this is how she's feeling about it, then
right.
This is something I'm going to do. Now, I wish I could say I've done that every single time in my life. Yeah. I'm sure I haven't. Yeah. But that's just one distinct memory of early on, like, idiot kid that I still was.
Yeah.
Like, got it at one point.
Yeah. Yeah. Kind of the overarching thing that you started out with really comes down to just having a teachable spirit, being willing to admit, I don't know this,
mm-hmm.
but I could learn it.
Right.
And all of life is really that. I'm just constantly astounded how people respond to things sometimes if you correct them on something, even if you do it, in my opinion, nicely, not combative, and just informative. It's like, there's no way anybody could know everything about any, even one thing. I mean, absolutely everything there is to know about something. It's like, it just isn't going to happen, let alone about everything in the entire world, your entire life. That is completely deluded. So expect that you're going to learn.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to continue to learn until you die. And you're going to have a much richer experience in life if you're willing to learn things at any turn. Somebody corrects you on something kind of inadvertently in a conversation, to not knee-jerk respond defensively, but go, well, let me fact check that. Let me Wikipedia that or whatever. It's like, let's go see, instead of arguing about how I learned what I know about it versus what how they learned what they know about it. It's like, well, let's go to a higher authority or let's find out.
Yeah, right.
It's like, would you rather be right or just what the truth with knowing, just knowing
right
what the truth is, what the fact is on any given situation?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's going to be lifelong. So the sooner you embrace that, the more fun you can have talking with people. And the more you learn about stuff, it gets easier to have conversations with a broader group of people, because you can converse intelligently about at least one thing you connect with them on, so you can feel like you had a conversation. You know?
Right, yeah.
Which I could never do as a kid. I mean, that's a newer thing for me. It's like, well, it's fun to have a meaningful conversation, especially if it's something somebody's really interested in, especially if they're not a believer.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel like you connected with them. You know, you talk about something they cared about.
Right.
You know, that's a huge touch point for people.
Mm-hmm.
Getting some street cred.
Right. And of course, the one popped in my head, you get some street cred, like, oh, so you're doing it to look cool? Like,
right. Well, then there could be mixed motives or wrong
right.
motives. Yep.
Right,
yep.
Right. But to sincerely be interested in what they're saying and have some clue what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And not pretend you're interested, because
right.
like, I don't know. So something that surprised me about our son-in-law, they had us over for dinner soon after they were married. And there was an issue. It's not, you could say it's a big thing, but it's like, you know what? It's their life. They have to do it the way they think is right. I'm not going to, you know, we've talked about it, and that's it. I'm not going to try to push the issue or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's nothing like, well, you shouldn't have married him if that was the way that was,
yeah.
you know. It was nothing like that. It's just yep. like, we differ on opinion about it and
yep.
whatever. And it was something about like what the Bible says about whatever. Yep. I don't want to get too specific, but.
Yep. They'll have that.
Right, right. And you feel more like, well, when it's a, like, if it's the, what kind of car you want to own, sure. If it's the way you cook, yeah. whatever. Like, you might be even have a strong opinion that you got to let go. But, like, when it's like, no,
fool.
But this is what the Bible says. You have to agree
yeah,
with
yeah.
me.
Like, yeah, right.
And again, so we had talked about it, and me and Grace and him and Linda, and we're just like, okay, whatever. We're
yeah.
We're not going to keep arguing about this. We're going to let it go because this is your life. But then, later we were sitting around eating and they had invited us over, and he's not a big talker. He's not a huge in the conversation all the time necessarily. Sometimes he can open up and talk more. But he says, Tim, I have a question for you on this issue that we've talked about in the past. He's like, what were the Bible verses again that you were bringing to the conversation? I want to look at those more and I just want to know more. I want to make sure I understand where you're coming from. I'm like, wow, that's a rare thing among mature Christians, I feel like, people who've been Christian for a long time. Like the conversation was over, like, we're done. I don't want to keep arguing. We're just, not that it was even a big argument, but, you know, like, the discussion was over. I wasn't going to bring it up again, you know. But then he came back, he's like, no, I want to know what you think on this, even if I still disagree. And I took it as, like, maybe he's wants to reconsider his thoughts on it or whatever. Either way, it's like, I was just like, cool, let me find these verses again. And we talked more about it. So I was like, I feel like this is a good guy.
that's a good trait. It's like, because if it's a biblical thing and you try to, like, to pick your battles wisely, you know, the things are really worth. And as they get married, then it's like, well, if it's a biblical issue, then it's worth discussing and given verses. If it's a personal preference, that's a different deal. But it's like, well, Bible says X, Y, Z.
Right.
Okay, so how do we embrace that?
Right. And this is a thing. It's like a, secondary, tertiary issue. It's not an essential doctrine that, like, if you don't believe this, then you literally can't be a Christian.
Right.
So you can discuss those things and it's good, you know, especially if two people want to have a conversation about it.
Yep.
But you got to avoid this, like, but you have to agree with me. I can't take it if you don't.
Right, yeah.
Even if it's Bible stuff, like, you can interpret it a different way. Like, again, as long as it's not some heresy or...
Right.
And one thing I've seen... Again, with this group of men on Facebook where people debate, you know, others, it's not just Calvinism, but the issues near or surrounding it kind of, and other theology issues. And somebody said, you know, just because an issue is a secondary issue, not a central Christian doctrine, that doesn't mean it's unimportant.
Yeah.
You can't just say, man, it doesn't matter. I don't care what I believe on that. It still might matter hugely to your life and other people and those around you, like what you believe about this. Like,
or you just haven't run into a situation where you realize what you believe about that really comes to bear on whatever your situation is.
Right.
It just hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. And as we said before, like, how does your doctrine affect your life and your practice? Like that, I mean, essentially is even more important than... the doctrine itself.
Because you can say you believe all kinds of things, but it's like, okay, well, do your actions prove that out? Do you actually behave consistent with whatever that issue is?
Right, yeah. Chris, a mutual friend of ours, not my son, and I were just talking the other night, and he brought up the issue of eternal security came up, once saved, always saved.
Yep.
And he's like, yeah, there's people who just say, well, if somebody falls from the faith, then that proves they were never saved. And he's like, turns out he doesn't agree with that. I'm like, wow, I didn't know this. So, and as we talked about it, it didn't even turn into an argument at all. We were just kind of talking. He was giving me his thoughts. And I was like, I can totally, like, you have a huge list of scriptures on both sides of that issue that, to me, they clearly can go either way. Like, I'm not going to be upset at somebody who disagrees with me on this thing because...
Does one way or the other excuse some kind of unbiblical behavior or lead you to obviously someplace not godly?
Right, exactly. How do you take this and apply it to your life and your practice and how you live? That's the major question. As we were talking and thinking about it, I was like, I mean, ultimately, you take two guys, they both say that they're Christian, they go to church every Sunday, they seem to be sincere, their lives are clean and don't have any gross immoral sin or issues or huge pride or and then all of a sudden one day one guy says, nope, don't believe in God anymore, I'm out of here, I'm an atheist now. Like, well, was he never saved or did he fall from the faith? Like, he's gonna end, you know, if you don't believe in Jesus, you go to hell. You know, so he ends up in hell. I mean, ultimately it's the same outcome either way, so whether he had salvation and lost it, or whether that proves that he never had it, like it.
Right.
How big a deal is it? Practically, the same outcome.
Right. Yeah. Unless there's, it's like, okay, well, he did always say or do this, and that was not biblical, or, you know, whatever. It's one of those things where it was just under the surface and just finally decided, I'm done saying no to that. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, whatever.
I've even heard, I listened to a sermon, I think it was from a Calvinist, and he was talking about, he said, and I think this is the way he put it, but it made me scratch my head. I'm like, this sounds like you're trying to hold on to once saved, always saved, but the way you're saying it, like... I'll just say it. He says, he's like, and if you're careful, if you continue in this sinful lifestyle and still claim to be a Christian, this could end up being proof that you're not saved. It's like, end up being, like, it sounds more like you're saying, if you're not careful, you could lose your salvation.
Right, so, right.
But he was trying to, you know.
Yep, right. I know it. It's like, how do you reconcile these two together if I hold so strongly to one specific view, one pole on this issue? And
right.
But I am not sure what to do with these couple other things on the other pole. How do I reconcile those things?
Right.
And how do I live then?
Yeah, and I guess, you know, I either fully believe or lean heavily toward eternal security. And I feel like I see what it does in my life, and it's a good thing. It leads me toward more godliness and more faith. And so this guy, I'm like, I think I get what you're saying, but I just, that's a weird way to say it.
Right. It well, then you got Paul he gives kind of a good measure for that, where he's talking about that it being a license to sin.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing, which is basically what I'm saying by, does whatever we say we believe, does it ultimately lead to some excusing of some sin that's, you know, over time does erode? I mean, if you just continue to say yes to that sin, it doesn't make good bedfellows, you know?
Right, yeah. I mean, now that we're on the topic, now I have more things to say. I feel like the two ditches you could get in are, well, once saved, always saved. It doesn't really matter how I live.
Right.
All my sins from now until eternity are already forgiven, and I can't. No one can take that away from me, like, and God won't let me go.
So I might as well commit them all.
Right, so I can kind of do whatever I want. Like, I feel like that's one ditch. Yep. But then if you go the other way, like, no, you can lose your salvation. You better be careful. Then the downside of that potentially could be, like, I'm constantly paranoid that God's going to let me go at any moment and say, it's too late for you. Nope, that was the last straw. Like, you screwed up one too many times.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's the...
And being really caught up in works because it's all on you. Totally depends on you.
It's like, right.
Yeah, no.
Right. Yeah. And my question always for that person is, like, where's the line?
Yeah.
What sin is God going to say, all right, you just lost your salvation on that one.
Like, right.
That was one step too far. That's the one part that, like, to me, like, I don't know how you would answer that as
how do you even measure that?
So, yeah.
It really comes down to heart attitude. Are you, is sin chasing you, or are you chasing sin?
Right, exactly.
So I said that earlier about this week, kind of thinking about, which is kind of how I came up to suggesting this as a topic of conversation, was winning at marriage, winning at parenting, winning at serving God and building his kingdom. And the conclusion to the ongoing thing to be considering with our days, our time spent, is, am I contributing to one of those things with how I'm spending my time and my money, my devotions to things? And for me to assess, you know, well, did I really want to go someplace, do something, own something, whatever? I was like, well, I really just want to serve God. I want to hear that, well done, good and faithful servant. To know that I spent my life's ambitions on godly ambitions. And that's not over until it's over on that one. But to ask yourself, oh, you think you're doing on that, and that being a measure of success, you know, did I win? It's like, well, okay, let's see. I'm still with the same woman. My kids.
I didn't totally destroy my kids.
Yeah,
completely.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be nice if the Bible's like, and here's how you can measure to find out exactly how well you did on every issue.
Yeah.
At any point, like, yes, I'm on track. I pulled out the tape measure. Right. Everything is where it should be.
Yeah.
So, are we winning?
Right. Exactly. Well, that might be a question more for people around us.
Yeah, right. That's true.
I mean, there can be the delusion where it's like, oh, you guys are amazing. It's like, well, okay, let me tell you about this. Let me tell you about that.
Again, everything's a balance, but for sure one thing that I've learned to a certain extent in my life, kind of like I said, like, it's really about leaning and trusting on God in everything. It's not about figuring everything out and doing everything right and being the one who solved it, you know, and did the right thing. But it's also, I mean, it is, you know, God wants us to make wise choices and solve the problems and put in the work to do the right thing, you know, raising our kids and loving our wives. You know, it, kind of as I always said, ultimately winning is like not losing hope and not losing faith in God, even though you haven't done things right. And it's okay. It's okay that a large portion of what I did throughout my life was not the correct way. I made dumb choices and I did things wrong. And not that I would do them again if I could go back with the knowledge I have now. But kind of like we said in a previous episode, like these are those experiences, like going through making an unwise choice and having to suffer the consequences for that. Those are the things that God has used to make us more mature.
Yep.
And teach us to trust him more.
Yep.
And make us wiser.
Yeah.
It's okay that I failed at a lot of things.
Right. Because we're not perfect. We're going to. That's the other fallacy. That's like, you're surprised that you didn't do that right for the first time? Really? It's the first time you did it.
Right.
You know, these people that get paid big money to do that all the time and do it amazingly, they didn't get that way overnight, you know?
Right, yeah.
It's going to take work. To get good at something, it's going to take work.
Now, what if I'd done it 100 times and I still made the same dumb mistake every time? Then what?
Oh, that might be time to give that up and pick a different hobby. I don't know.
Regroup and
yeah, right.
Think harder
before get some instruction from somebody who is winning at it.
Right.
There's always that, and that's the pride. A lot of times will keep us from. We know we're not winning, but it's like, well, what are you going to do about it? It might come down to you and humble yourself and ask somebody who you can see is winning and go, "What are you doing, man? How are you doing this?
Right.
Help me, because I just can't beat this thing."